Welcome to iNurse Radio, brought to you by the International Nurses Association.
Hello and welcome to another edition of iNurse. I'm your guest host, Jeff Allen. On this segment, we're going to talk about something which has become a very popular topic of conversation among medical professionals, quality of care guidelines. Now, this is something that the American Nurses Association has addressed with the goal of improving patient safety by promoting quality in nursing care and nurses' work lives. As a result, the National Center for Nursing Quality, also known as the NCNQ, was established in 1998 to focus on and advocate for quality of nurse-patient interaction through quality measurement, research, and collaborative learning. The center seeks to become more informative about issues such as the relationship between nurse staffing and outcomes of patient care. Joining me for our discussion of quality of care guidelines is critical care registered nurse Rezina Malaska. In addition to practicing nursing, Rezina also dedicates her time to teach and inspire nurse students as an adjunct professor at Notre Dame College and Cuyahoga Community College. You may remember Rezina from a previous episode of iNurse when she spoke with us about reducing nurse fatigue. And if you'd like to hear that program, you can find it on our website at blogtalkradio.com/iNurse Radio. And I'm going to read that whole thing again just to make sure it's absolutely clear. And I know you've been here a million times, but again, that's blogtalkradio.com/iNurse Radio. Nurse Rezina, welcome back to our program. It's good to have you back with us again.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here to contribute to anything that would help the nursing profession.
Well, that's quite all right. We're so pleased to have you with us because you have a depth of experience that comes from many years in your field, and you are well-traveled. You have been around and across the country, and you have had many experiences. And I thought what we would do right now is kind of take just a moment before we get into the questions, Nurse Rezina, for you to just kind of fill us in a little bit on some of the background data that I didn't give. We know that you are obviously teaching nurse students and you're a critical care registered nurse, but just kind of fill us in a little bit on some biographical material, your background, where you've been, and who you've kind of touched.
So when I was a little girl, I wanted to become a nurse, and I had the opportunity in my early 20s. I wanted to do it right after high school, but you know, because of personal circumstances, couldn't. So what I actually did was I, you know, moved to England to Oxford School of Nursing, and that's basically where I did my nurse training, and had a, you know, a bittersweet experience. It was wonderful in some sense, and it was difficult in other sense, but I had a focus. I wanted to become a nurse, so I focused on what I needed to do to become the best nurse ever. I had an incredible training. You know, the Brits really know how to train nurses. Subsequently moved back to Canada after I passed the boards in the UK and nursed in Vancouver, Canada for several years until I met and married my husband who was in the Air Force. We met while I was vacationing in Hawaii, and then he dragged me across to the USA. So I'm licensed to practice in England, in Canada, and the United States. As a military wife, I've worked all across the country because obviously you have to go where the military sends your husband, you know. I've also held many hats in nursing from charge nurse, you know. I've always had a strong interest in teaching. So I've mentored and taught and coached many, many new nurses, student nurses in Canada, charge nurse, you know, of whatever unit, shared governance unit. I've also survived a 600-bedded university hospital closure in 1993 in Vancouver, Canada. The British Columbia government streamlined services and did a radical move in closing this hospital to save dollars, okay? And that was a painful experience. I've been a critical care nurse essentially for 20 years. And I've also worked as an agency nurse in the Northern Virginia, D.C., Maryland area. So it's just exposed me to a lot of different aspects of nursing, different hospital systems, you know, It just makes you a stronger person, basically.
Well, it sounds like we have the right person to talk about today's topic, Nurse Rezina. So once again, we appreciate having you. You know, the last time you were here, we talked about reducing nurse fatigue. And when we discussed quality of care guidelines between nurses and their patients, what I was interested in finding out, and you sharing with our audience, do you feel as though the quality of life for the nurse can strongly influence the quality of care that the patient receives? And in other words, do you feel that nurses that experience fatigue or deal with high levels of stress, given the nature of their job, can potentially have a ripple effect or pass that along as in terms of the quality of care that a patient receives? What do you think?
Of course. You know, if we are not our best self, you know, we are under stress and we are dealing with everything else that we have to deal with in life, from personal, family to the work situation, it will have an effect on the kind of care you deliver. But most importantly is the stresses that we have in the work environment, okay, over and above anything else. There is such a huge disconnect between nurse leadership management and the bedside nurse, okay? And, you know, a lot of thought and a lot of, you know, focus is not going into taking care of the nurse. If you don't take care of your nurses and your employees, how do you expect your nurses to provide optimum of care, to form that therapeutic nurse-patient relationship that is so essential to nursing in the 21st century of healthcare delivery? And let me touch again on why nurse-patient relationship is so important and culture of safety. The National Strategy, Quality Strategy, which was, you know, which came about because of the Institute of Medicine's 1999 Sentinel report to Air is Human, Building a Safer Health System. They made headlines when they reported on the medical errors and the patient safety issues, okay? And the IOM recommendations for improving patient safety, developing a culture of care to improve outcomes, you know, they got together with Congress and with the AHRQ and federal partners, non-federal stakeholders, and they started the process for remedying the patient safety issues. So this is where the National Quality Strategy 3 aims came in. Their aim is better care, healthy people, and healthy communities, and affordable care, of course. And you can find this in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services 2012. Along with that came about the Joint Commission, okay? The Joint Commission standards for behaviors that undermine a culture of safety, and this can be found on Joint Commission 2008, they recommend employing strategies that promote a culture of safety for improved patient outcomes, okay? Then we've got the American Association of Colleges of Nursing, the AACN. In answering the call for improved patient safety and outcomes, quality of care, recommend nurses be well-trained. They recommend nurses go back to school and obtain the highest level of degree you can have that specifically speaks to bedside care, that speaks to clinical care, and that's for nurses to be DNP trained. So currently, I've answered all of those calls all the way along. When I started nursing in Oxford, England, I graduated with a diploma in nursing, a 3.5-year program, okay? 6 months after I graduated, or a period of time after I graduated, they added another 6 months to that, reorganized the curriculum, and made it into a degree program, but I had already moved back to Canada. I've put myself through school all the way along while working as a military wife night shift. I've been a night nurse for almost 20 years. So I'm in the doctorate program right now, the DNP program. So that's the AACN's call to improve patient safety, outcomes, and quality of care. They want us to implement practice to utilize health systems and technology and bring evidence-based practices to the bedside. That is going is a solution for improved outcomes and patient quality of patient care. However, you've got to look at all the things that nurses face at the bedside, which is going to be a whole other probably 2 or 3 shows to talk about.
It probably would, but what I would like to try to do, if we can, you know, you mentioned all the various organizational and agency bodies that are kind of involved in helping to educate and inform nurses in order to help them, support them, and get them ready to provide the finest care that they possibly can. But, I mean, with all of this said, with all of the information just provided, are there certain other factors, and we don't have to go into a great deal of depth on each one, but are there two, three, or maybe four other factors that you believe are very, very important that also play a key role in quality of care for patients?
Yes. Interdisciplinary care is very important, okay? Nurses spend the most time of any of the healthcare, anyone in the healthcare profession, providing care for that patient. So, yes, we are key, okay? But the nurse does not own the patient care entirely. We advocate for our patients. We provide the care. We do everything that we're told we need to do to improve that quality of care, but there is a huge interdisciplinary component, okay? We have to work together as a team, the doctors, the nurses, the respiratory therapists, the social workers, the case managers, you know, the occupational health therapists, the nurses' aides, the secretary, the environmental services people. It truly is a collaborative effort, okay, in providing that care. And if one aspect, if the patient is not satisfied with one aspect of that care, then patient satisfaction scores, which is used to be tied to, you know, quality of care, and well, there's a couple of schools of thought for that. Let's just say it affects our satisfaction scores. Okay, it's very difficult, you know, in the current environment, to please everybody. We really have to look at what the problems are, what the factors are, the barriers in place, okay? So I've given you what the interdisciplinary team is, okay? And then, you know, we've got technology. We have to use technology to improve patient safety, right? Like your barcode, medication administration record, okay? But if your scanner isn't working in the room and there's issues with the computer, then there is one factor that has to do with technology that is a barrier in place to that affects patient safety, patient care.
What about, and this is kind of a popular, I think, item for discussion, Nurse Rezina, what about one's health care coverage, and particularly with the Affordable Health Care Act that has become really a hot topic of conversation and was enacted now about a year and a half or so ago from the time of this particular program during which we're speaking. Tell us a little bit about the person's health care insurance and how that may, their level of coverage, how that may influence the quality of care that they receive. Is that a factor in your mind?
You know, I've been very lucky to work for organizations that, for the most part, that I'm not aware of that have, I guess, how should I put this, that because of lack of insurance, provided sub-quality care to the patient. But there are organizations out there where insurance matters. Recently, I was at a conference in Chicago basically strategies for improving care. It was a National Physician Summit conference co-produced by World Congress. And that was where I learned patients who, there are some systems that discharge patients after a couple of days, and then they're readmitted within days or within hours, basically. Every time the patient is readmitted, from a nursing perspective, we always thought that it would affect our readmission rates would affect reimbursement. What I learned was for Medicare patients, not necessarily, if I'm correct in interpreting what I learned at this conference, the financial aspect, because it's a new admission and you are paid that, you know, that sum of money for the new admission, even with readmissions. Now, I can honestly tell you that my late mother-in-law, she had 10 admissions in 4 months at a particular hospital system, and she passed away. She did not get good quality of care. You know, granted, she had breast cancer and she had a recurrence of it, but she had also bought 7 or 8 medical diagnoses. You know, how do you explain 10 admissions in 4 months in a hospital system for alleged pneumonia, right? So when we talk about readmissions, we talk about, first of all, you did not treat the patient correctly, or you did not provide good quality of care. She should not have been discharged nine times. And at the 10th admission, she needed a higher level of care, meaning she needed to be in the critical care unit. And she made the decision, you know what, my quality of life is not going to be good. Too many things are happening. And she was still of sound mind and body at that point in time when she made herself a DNR, DNI, meaning do not resuscitate, do not intubate. And she chose to have hospice care. But it doesn't take away from the fact that she had 10 admissions in a four-month period. So, yes, there are organizations out there, but I'm lucky enough not to be working for any of them or have worked for any of them that I'm aware of, you know.
And it's really, it probably bodes well for those individuals to out there who may be concerned about future health care and being taken care of in the right kind of facility that is appropriate for their particular condition, really, to maybe do some advanced research just to kind of become a little bit more educated and informed about maybe potential problems or something like that. And it's so hard to tell, but there's a wealth of research available online that people could go and probably just simply Google, you know, the medical center or hospital in their neighborhood or in surrounding communities in order to find more about them and check on the types of reviews that they've received from patients with regard to the quality of care that they provide. We're talking with critical care registered nurse Rezina Malaska about guidelines for quality of care on today's edition of iNurse Radio. I'm your guest host, Jeff Allen, today. Thank you so much for tuning in. And Nurse Rezina, you know, many hospitals provide various supports besides medical treatment, which includes psychological, clergy, etc. And obviously, hospitals are trying to provide as much quality care as they can. However, do you feel that these institutions are somewhat restricted at times based on resources that are available to them?
Honestly, and I will go back to the statement I made earlier that I've been very lucky to work for organizations that I am not aware are doing that.
Yes.
My experiences across the United States the past 20 years, if a patient, you know, comes in and we view the patient holistically, so the patient comes in, the nurse, you know, admits the patient, forms a relationship with the patient, realizes that the patient that comes in for abdominal pain or lung cancer, they have other medical conditions that require interdisciplinary care. So if the patient has depression problems and, you know, then we can put it, you know, request the doctors to give us a psych consult. Or if the patient requires physical therapy, occupational therapy, or the CHF patient comes in and they have financial difficulties, or they don't have a place to live, then we go ahead and consult with social services, you know, get a case manager on the case. If a patient has, you know, cardiac issues and they are still smoking, then it's up to the nurse to do the appropriate screening and consult services to help that patient quit smoking. Or more importantly, if the patient comes in and has depression problems and maybe suicidal tendencies, then the nurse has to, you know, recommend the appropriate consultation, and we have to screen those patients. Same thing with alcoholism, you know. So in addition to providing care for them with their current problems, we do have to look at the patient holistically, and we do have to make sure that everything is being done to help this patient, because if we only treated the one problem and we send them out again, discharge them, then they're back in within 24 hours because we did not look at the other issues. You know,
Nurse Rezina, you've been in education now since, is it 2012? Did I get that right?
I've been teaching. I happened to stumble upon teaching for a college that provides the BSN program since 2012, yes.
Okay.
As an agency nurse, I stumbled upon that.
Well, very, very good. The reason that I ask is that we'd kind of given that as part of the introduction to the program, But what I was interested in knowing is, based on what you had just kind of talked about, how do you teach the importance of quality care guidelines to your students? And, you know, is there anything in particular that you try to really emphasize and really key in on, based on your experience and based on the curriculum, of course, when discussing this topic of quality care?
First of all, I make it very clear to the students in orientation. We usually have a little orientation. Can be an hour or a couple of hours. Facilities that we go to will also conduct an orientation, because students have to know what the expectations are. If you have students in your facility and they're not providing the type of, communication skills or any of those, that's going to affect that nurse-patient relationship, because obviously students need to learn, and in learning, they're around patients and the other staff, so it's very important. I say to them right off the bat, you have to come into this profession with the goal of helping other people. If you come into it for making money, you're in the wrong profession, okay? You have to like people. You have to want to do this. You have to come in with authenticity, with a caring manner. You have to be able to look at that patient and assess them and provide whatever it is necessary to help them heal, okay? So what does that mean? What does caring mean? If you don't show your patient caring, how is your patient going to know that you truly care about them? Communication is very important. Listening skills is very important. You cannot go into a patient's room with your agenda and tell the patient what to do without acknowledging their needs, listening to what they're telling you. Listening is a very, very key part of nursing. So it's all of the things that goes along with communication, providing the care they need, listening to them, working with them, working in a collaborative manner. Okay, I call it communication, collaboration, cooperation, and be considerate. That's what I call it. So what I do is I guide them, I coach them, I encourage them, I mentor them. Because once again, some people, they don't know how to do this, and others have some experience. Perhaps they're clinical techs or nursing care partners or whatever terminology you're calling it these days, which is the support part of the profession that supports nurses, or, you know, care partners work with nurses to provide care. So I, as an instructor, have to make sure that they're acting appropriately, they're being professional, they're communicating correctly with the patient, and I'm there to support them, teach them, guide, mentor. This is how we do this. If the vital signs are not within the normal limits, then we need to make sure that the primary care nurse knows that some intervention occurs, right? If we're not in tune with what we're doing and we're not able to have that ability to monitor our patients, we're going to miss key important stuff, right? Because it's you at the bedside taking care of the patient. You should be able to spot or to realize or to assess when the patient's going into trouble, meaning their situation is getting worse.
Well, Nurse Rezina, she is Nurse Rezina Malaska, and talking about quality care guidelines. She's a critical care registered nurse, by the way, and we're so pleased to have her once again here on iNurse Radio. She's joined us before. My name is Jeff Allen, by the way. It's good to have you here. And let's kind of jump ahead then. Once those nursing students are they're in the workaday world, they're nurses, and now they've joined a large and very distinguished brotherhood and sisterhood of fellow nurses across the country who are working so hard to provide improved quality care. Tell us a little bit about any measures for continual improvement in providing quality care that are available to nurses across the country right now. Are there such things as workshops and lectures and other types of helpful programs that nurses attend or take part in to help them improve in terms of providing these quality care measures to their patients?
Yes, we're held highly accountable for being up to date with evidence-based practices. That requires, for example, the organization I work for currently, they have mandatory education days. And there are a number of things we have to go through doing the education online through the intranet. We're assigned educational modules. Depending on what area you're in for the critical care nurse, there's a lot of education we have to complete yearly. And you don't sit down and complete it in one day. It's ongoing. As a certified critical care nurse, I'm CCRN, which is critical care registered nurse. So to be a critical care registered nurse in Canada, I went through a 17-credit undergrad course that the British Columbia nursing system purchased from AACN years ago before I could work in the critical care area. In the United States, it is a certification test, which I tested as well in Canada. But when I moved to the United States, it wasn't accepted, so I had to go back and go through the same, essentially the same system, except it was not run by a college as it is in Canada. So I tested and passed. For any nurse wanting to work in the healthcare field, whether you are a critical care nurse or a med-surg nurse or a palliative care nurse, you have to have the basic life support system course, okay? It's called BLS. That is renewed every 2 years, and it's following the guidelines of the American Heart Association. I'm also advanced cardiac life support certified. So that is also renewed every 2 years. So we have to go through on education day. I have much more education to do. There are courses around the country. There's NTI, National, NTI with critical care nurses. There are other board of nursing for each state has their minimum mandatory requirements in terms of CEUs education that nurses must complete every year. There's lots of stuff. And if you truly are invested in keeping up with your education, you do what you need to do. Some nurses go over and above the required education. In my view, being a nurse means you're a lifelong learner. You have to keep up with the evidence-based practices in order to provide that quality of care. And so, you know, I've been going to school for a long time. That's commitment.
Never really out of school, and particularly if you're dedicated, Nurse Rezina, as you seem to be, and given all that you've been through and all that you've learned and all that you're doing to teach now nurses of the future. And by the way, we have only really now just about 60 seconds left, and my last question are for those future nurses that are tuned in right now, the students. What advice, Nurse Rezina, would you give to them about achieving the highest amount of quality care for their future patients, given the guidelines that nurses have to work with?
Follow what your instructor is telling you. Read research. Look at the internet. Look at what's out there. Hopefully your instructors are modeling the behaviors that is expected of you in the environment. Do what is right by the patient. Be honest. Be caring, kind, compassionate, empathetic. Listen to your patient. Communicate. If you don't know how to communicate, learn what it means to communicate as a nurse in the field. And ask questions. If you don't ask questions, how are you going to know? We need to ask questions to clarify. You know, communicate, collaborate, cooperate, and be considerate. That's what I say.
Valuable words of advice from a lady who has really seen it all, and she has elevated to such an extremely high level. Nurse Rezina Malaska, we thank you so much for joining us on iNurse Radio to talk about this very important topic, and no doubt we'll have you back on again in the future.
Thank you, Jeff. It was my pleasure. Have a great day, everyone, and happy Nurses Week.
That's Rezina Malaska, critical care nurse and adjunct professor at Notre Dame College and Cuyahoga Community College. And that wraps up another edition of iNurse Radio, presented by the International Nurses Association. To hear this and other editions of iNurse at any time and on any device, simply click over to blogtalkradio.com. iNurse Radio. Thanks again for listening. My name is Jeff Allen, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon.